I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with the Deal, and today our guest is Ed Lee, a corporate partner at Kirkland & Ellis in New York. Ed, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So we're going to talk about your career arc on today's podcast, how you got into M&A, deals that were particularly formative for you, your move to Kirkland several years ago, and a couple of deals you've done there, and also how you have seen the legal industry evolve in the course of your career. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the law.
Yeah, sure. So I was born and raised in Orange County, California. Very common sort of immigrant story. Parents had immigrated from South Korea in the 70s. And I should start by saying, law school wasn't something that was like a conscious choice. It's one of these situations where I sort of defaulted into it because I wasn't sure what else I wanted to do with my life. And I did have some family members. My grandfather was a very senior prosecutor in Korea. And so I was around lawyers and had other uncles that were in the law. So it just seemed like a natural step for me. I had no idea what I wanted to do as a lawyer. I remember I got pretty lucky. My 1L summer, I got a great summer job as a summer associate in Morrison & Foerster's Newport Beach office, which was amazing in lots of ways, including being close to home and also just an incredible part of the world. And they had us split our time half the time in corporate, half the time in litigation. And I think I decided I want to be a corporate lawyer after my first litigation, legal research and writing project. Very quickly realized that wasn't for me. But I lucked into the fact that I love what I do today. I was working on an IPO that summer, I remember, and I was so clueless back then. Like, I had to Google the term IPO because I had no idea what it meant when I was told I was going to work on that. So when I decided I wanted to do corporate law, my plan had always been to go to law school and move back to LA. I was very big on California on the West Coast. But I made the choice that if I was going to do corporate law, that New York would be the most exciting place to do it. No offense to our West Coast listeners. And I would probably start there and eventually make my way back west. And I ended up as a summer associate at Cravath and really loved the experience. I loved being part of the New York deal scene. And here we are many years later, still doing.
So talk about how formative that experience was for you. Being a summer associate, obviously, you know, maybe 10, 12 weeks, but something was pivotal in your career.
Yeah, it really was. And when I speak to law students or summer associates, I always encourage them to really make the most out of their summer experience for a number of reasons. I look back at my summer as one of the best experiences of my life, having the first experience feeling like a professional in an exciting industry. And really, the most important part for me was the friendships that I formed and the mentors that I met in that setting. Some of my best friends in life to this day are people that I met from my summer class. And I think even if some of those friends over the years sort of dissipate and a modern law firms move to different cities and all of that, the first few years as a law firm associate are tough, right? And having like this cohort of people that you develop personal bonds with during your summer is a huge resource during those first few years, both substantively, like the person that you can feel comfortable asking the dumb question to, whether it's a technology question, administrative question, or a substantive question, just having this group of people you can rely on. And also socially, like, it's tough having a social life as a young associate sometimes at these law firms with the hours that you work. And even more than the number of hours, I think it's really the unpredictability of the hours and the variability and being on constantly. And having a group of friends that's also experiencing that, and so that you can build some flexibility with each other, right? Like, it may be very hard to keep dinner appointments at Wednesdays at 7 o'clock, and you may have to cancel those from time to time. But if you're getting out at 10 o'clock and you send your last email for the night, having a group of friends that understands how your professional life is, and you could send an email around and see if someone's up for grabbing a quick beer, and there are people living a similar way that you are, I think that goes a long way. So,
and talk about your experience as an associate and what made M&A compelling for you.
I started my career doing a year of capital markets. And I always tell people that was a great experience for me because there are things you pick up with different practice areas, different practice types that are definitely transferable across, but you pick up different things too. And all of that creates a fabric of yourself as a lawyer. So I really feel like I benefited a lot from that experience. But as soon as I started doing M&A, and that was as a second year associate at Cravath, working for people like Scott Barchet, who I still consider a friend and a mentor, it was just very exciting. And it was exciting because it's so multidisciplinary. Oftentimes, if you're fortunate enough to work on big, impactful deals, very often, at least for one party and often both, it's the most critical and important thing going on for the company at the moment. Oftentimes, these deals are career defining for the people involved. And it's a real gratifying experience to be able to be a part of that. And as you get more senior, feeling like you are a trusted advisor for people whose careers, whose companies, whose life's work is at stake, it's a gratifying experience to be trusted in that context.
Talk about a couple of pivotal deals earlier in your career.
Yeah. So one deal I will always remember, and I was maybe a fourth or fifth year associate at Wachtell at the time. And I joined Wachtell in 2008. So I joined ready to be really busy, young second year associate, finishing up my second year. And then the financial crisis happened. And there really wasn't much to do even there for the first couple of years. So I sort of felt like I was drifting a little bit and I hadn't found my place within the firm. And I think about my career, and there's a lot of hard work involved, but there's also a lot of luck and good fortune involved. And one of those pieces of good luck and good fortune, I would say that I'm very grateful for, is there was a small project that was assigned to me that involved Marty Lipton. And just to say it, Marty Lipton, I consider one of the greatest human beings I've ever met, not just one of the greatest M&A lawyers I've ever met. But for some reason, a small assignment, I didn't get much exposure to him. I got a little, like he liked me for some reason. And so maybe a week later, a partner at Wachtell, Josh Kammerer, called me into his office and said, I'm not sure who you are. I've never met you before, but you have a big fan upstairs. And he was referred to Marty, and I got staffed on UTC's $18 billion acquisition of Goodrich, which was a huge deal for a client that was a very, very big and important client for the firm, but also personally a client that was, is important to Marty. And that really changed my trajectory at the firm. I worked on United Technologies deals for the rest of my time while I was there. And that led to me meeting lots of other partners and having lots of great exposure and opportunities at the firm. And that really sort of started it. And UTC also ended up being really the last major deal I worked on at Wachtell. And during the course of those 12 years I was at the firm as an associate and then as a partner, the company went through this incredible transformation, right? It was a conglomerate that had Otis that did elevators, Carrier that did the HVAC, and had this jet engine and aerospace business. And there was a real reason why those three different businesses were together. It's much more complicated than this, but to state it very simply, the elevator and HVAC businesses generated a lot of cash that was then used to fund a lot of very expensive CapEx needs to develop jet engines and things like that, that are much longer term programs. And over that decade or 12 years, UTC transformed by acquiring larger and larger aerospace assets and businesses, including $30 billion Rockwell Collins deal, selling Sikorsky to Lockheed. These are really amazing, exciting deals. At the end of it, the last deal was to merge the aerospace business with Raytheon. And that really then created an aerospace and defense business that was large enough to fund the projects in a very economic way. And so we did the Raytheon merger and spun out Carrier and Otis all at the same time. That whole very complicated, large transaction closed in April of 2020. If I'm sure the listeners will recall, that's right after the world shut down. And I remember in March of 2020, as COVID stopped the world overnight, seemingly, working with the management team and the board and thinking through whether you're going to continue to close, what's going to happen, what changes we needed to make to the deals and the capital structures of the companies to make sure that they would be healthy in that environment. It was an experience that I won't ever forget. And the other reason I wanted to talk about these deals is being part of that transformation with the client, feeling like I was there at the beginning of it with the Goodrich deal and through the end of it with the Raytheon mergers and the spins. That was a special experience and one unlikely to be replicated. Maybe you get lucky, you are able to do that with 2-3 clients over the course of a career, but even one having that experience, I consider myself very lucky and fortunate.
Did that transformation and how deeply it must have involved you in the business rationale behind it at all tempt you to go to the business side? Or did you feel that you were better suited to being a lawyer, or you just enjoyed the legal side more than you thought you might enjoy another spot in the financial world?
That's a good question. I mean, I think many, if not most, M&A lawyers that are doing it at this point in their careers, like me, still have had that thought, right? And many friends in the industry, I'm sure you hear from them all the time. And you see stories of successful M&A lawyers making that transition and having a lot of success. So yes, absolutely. I did think about that. Well, I thought about it very seriously when I was a mid-level associate. And I always tell people, being a mid-level associate is particularly hard because on the one hand, on some deals, you're still relatively junior and expected to report to senior associates at all hours and get through data rooms in 48 hours and things like that. On the other hand, on some deals, you have a much more senior role that requires being able to take a step back and really think about things and manage an entire process. And having those dual sort of roles can be very, very challenging because demands on your time and your attention are constantly conflicting. And so during that point in time, I was really questioning whether I wanted to continue in the law, certainly at least in big law. And I went out and I interviewed at investment banks and hedge funds and things like that and ended up with a couple of really great offers. And again, like now I look at it, you know, as a very lucky thing. Those processes just took a long time, right? They weren't 1 month. I think it was a 6-month process from like my first interview to having those offers. And in part because I think when you're trying to make a career move like that, the financial firms all want to make sure that you're serious about it, that you understand it. And so you understand what you're getting yourself into and why. And so it took a long time. And I would say that in those 6 months, my perspective on the legal industry and whether I wanted to stay in the law changed. I was getting more responsibility on more deals. I really enjoyed that. I had more exposure to more senior people at the clients and starting to see sort of the giving advice part of the job as opposed to just the grinding part. And I started to enjoy it a lot more. And I decided that the right choice for me at that time would be to see it through a bit longer. And as I saw it through, I started to like the job and the roles and the deals more and more. And here I am still many years later.
Talk about your move to Kirkland in 2020.
Yeah, so that was one of the most difficult decisions I've made in my life. I was in a great role as a partner at an amazing firm that I have nothing but absolute admiration and gratitude and respect for. And it was a decision that took place over many months. It wasn't an overnight decision, certainly. So by the time I made the decision, we were like bumping into COVID. I made the move in May of 2020, early May of 2020. And I had to make a sub decision, right? Like I had made the big decision. And do I wait to see how long lockdown exists? And maybe after a couple months, I could leave after COVID's over. Good thing I didn't make that choice. Or I could just move forward with that at that time, even though it was very bit head scratching to a lot of outside observers as to why you would move during the middle of COVID. And I decided that once the big decision had been made, I owed it really to my former firm to just get on with it quickly. And so I would say that I'd gotten to know people like David Fox and got to know of people like John Davis and Daniel Wolf over the years. And I just thought, what Kirkland was building in New York, but also just around the country, was really exciting, right? It was different from anything the legal industry had seen before, right? Instead of trying to be the best version of a big law firm in a model that already existed, from my perspective as a competitor, It was they're just trying to do something different in a different way. It didn't seem beholden at all to any concept of how things have always been done in our industry. And having the opportunity to be part of that and continue to build something that was new and unique in our industry was just really exciting. And the other thing is, I mentioned this story to you at a prior conversation. I had dinner at some point in the past with a good friend of mine whose father happened to be a big time M&A lawyer in the 90s during like all those big takeover battles and the 80s and 90s. And one bit of career advice he had given to his son, which was then passed on to me, was gotta have fun as part of the job, right? That's one of the things that he had gotten the most satisfaction from in being this big time M&A lawyer was the fact that he had a lot of fun with people that he considered his friends. And as part of my process in considering the move, I got to know John Davis really well and got to know other people like David Klein, who are about the same age as me. And we had this personal connection from the beginning where I felt like I could have a personal relationship, a friendship with these people while also building a practice together. And that was really exciting and attractive to me too. And that's really held true. I remember some people were skeptical thinking Kirkland had sort of this reputation of being a tough place and a competitive place. And these are young M&A stars that are the same age as you. And how is that going to work out? How are they going to feel about you coming over? And what I was told was that's not the mentality. And the mentality is if we're able to do something to help make the firm stronger, that's good for everyone. And we're going to be partners and friends and do this together. And that's 100% been the case since I moved. I consider many of my partners, some of my closest personal friends, and have a lot of fun doing all of that, doing what we do together, both as partners and as friends. So that's been a great experience.
So it sounds like for you, the extended interview process at Kirkland really helped you integrate into the firm after you made the move.
Yeah, absolutely. I took a lot of time and did a lot of diligence, in particular around the strategy of the firm, but more even the culture. Like, is this a place where I would be happy? Is this a place where I would have a lot of fun doing it with people that I connected with? And that was really the focus of my diligence in the process. And like I said, it's been 100% on the mark in that regard.
Talk about the changes you've seen in 16 or 17 years you've practiced law, the changes in the profession.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think the industry has changed dramatically. And I think there's lots of different drivers and reasons. One in particular that I think is a major contributor is just the rise of the private equity industry. Private equity, when I started my career, was a real thing and a real industry, but it's grown by multiples during the course of my career. And private equity firms, small to the largest and most sophisticated, from formation to fundraising to getting deals done to buying companies, selling companies, restructuring companies, litigation, across the entire arc of what private equity firms do, they need and rely on top quality legal advice. So that's driven a real demand for high-end legal services during the course of my career and has reshaped the legal industry in a lot of ways. And because firms have had to adapt in order to be able to serve that demand, which can be different in some ways versus more traditional public company corporate practice. And you know, Kirkland is an example of that, that has really leaned into setting itself up to be able to serve both the large corporates, but also private equity firms really effectively across all of their most critical needs. And so I think that's been a big, probably the biggest contributor to the changes that we've seen in the legal industry. And I compare it a bit to the 80s when before the 80s, most of the large top law firms in the corporate space weren't really focused on M&A, right? It wasn't really a thing. And you read stories about that opened up an opportunity for firms like Wachtell Lipton and Skadden Arps to become leading forces and eventually these great firms by focusing on M&A as there was like this big boom in that area in the 80s. It's an area that the firms that had preceded them weren't focused on.
How do you see law firms evolving in the next 5 to 10 years?
That's a good question. I think it'll be a continued evolution much like that we've been seeing over the last decade. I think more firms are trying to be proactive in thinking about where they need to put their chess pieces on the board in order to be where their clients are going early as opposed to reacting late. So it's a very competitive industry. A lot of smart people that are trying to compete very hard for clients. But I think you'll see more and more firms trying to be proactive in terms of thinking about, well, where do we need to invest people and talent so that the next area where clients are going to need us, we're going to be well equipped. And so I just think it's going to even grow more competitive in that regard.
Talk about a couple of deals you've worked on in your time at Kirkland.
Yeah, so I think about a deal a few years back. It was right after I joined. Verizon called and they needed to sell Verizon Media. I helped them acquire Yahoo as part of Verizon Media a few years prior. And that's a deal I will always remember because it was just a terrific feeling that shortly after I had moved, a real marquee client like Verizon was willing to put their trust in an important transaction in Kirkland, our platform, and myself. And it was our first corporate transaction for them. So that feeling like, yes, things are going to go well here, and feeling that boost of confidence shortly after you move, that meant a lot to me on a number of levels. And it was also great because it was one of the first really complicated deals that I worked on post my move, and really being able to work with some of the incredibly talented people across the different practice areas and feeling like, yeah, I mean, I have this team and network and platform here at Kirkland that's going to really support a successful practice. I'll always remember that. And another deal, which is not an M&A deal, that sort of, if you bookend it, my client Webtoon Entertainment just priced their IPO on NASDAQ today, top of the range, and I think it's trading up and it's all good stuff. And one of the reasons why that deal is meaningful to me is it's this very exciting media and technology company that is based in LA, that is growing in North America, that has an important role in creating a lot of content that we see on all the Netflix and the other streaming services that you probably don't realize came from Webtoon, but the content IP is from Webtoon. But the company was born out of South Korea. Its parent company was Naver Corporation, sort of like the leading internet company in South Korea, and has been an M&A client of mine over the last couple of years. And I'm a Korean American. You know, my parents immigrated in the 70s, like I mentioned. And for the last 5-10 years, the explosion of Korean culture in the United States, and I think it's kind of in New York in particular, has been an amazing experience for me as a Korean American to witness, and goes way beyond K-pop, but just from the movies and really the food and all of the and Korean art, seeing that cultural acceptance and interest in my country, which is America, but of my country of origin, Korea, has been like a really incredible experience. And also as a father of young Korean American children, really cool that they get to grow up in New York City and see that people are really interested in their culture and media content from where their grandparents live and all of that. I think it's a cool experience. And I feel like Webtoon is just like a real example of that, and feeling like mostly my capital markets partners, but a little bit myself on this one, the sort of playing a role directly in a little bit of that cultural expansion and acceptance in the United States. So it's something that I couldn't have fathomed growing up in the 80s and 90s.
And then finally, talk a little bit about how you balance work with a life outside of work.
Yeah. So it's a great question. And also something that whether I'm asked or not, and I try to provide unsolicited advice to young law students and young associates in this regard, nothing is more important to me than my family and my children. And I'm a believer that you have to find some balance in your life. And in our profession, that can be challenging. And I think the way you need to approach it, as I said before, is with flexibility, right? If you have a mindset of like, these are the hours where I'm working edly, and these are the hours where I'm personal edly, like that's not sustainable in our practice, right? If you accept with some flexibility that those lines are going to blur a lot, right? And There's going to be times on the weekend when I'm busy, but there's going to be times on Tuesdays when I'm a bit more free and not feeling like I have to define the lines in a way, but rather being flexible and having it blur together a little bit, accepting that. And then A, right, the mindset, and then B, making it a priority. If you can't answer emails for an hour because you need to be at some event at your child's school, the world won't stop, right? You got to make some things a priority for yourself and for your family. I think those two things together, it can work. And the other thing I always say to people is basic, but very hard to do things. And you do have to prioritize is take care of yourself, like physically, mentally. I'm a big believer in mental health and also physical health. And I spend a lot of time at the gym. I encourage people, including myself, if they can benefit from seeing therapists and all that. I'm a big believer in taking care of yourself. And that makes you a better lawyer, better husband, better father, better friend. So those are things that I try to pass on to anyone who will listen.
Ed, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
For Drinks with the Deal, I'm David Marcus.